Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. The Milwaukee Opera Theater began in 1998 as a way to provide professional opportunities for artists in the Milwaukee area. It also offers composers a chance to write smaller-scale works that might never make it to a larger community such as the Florentine, and gives audiences a chance to see them. And since Jill Anaponicek was named Artistic Director in 2008, the company has enhanced that mission. This weekend, the company produces the Eurydice Festival at Carroll University. It's based on the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice in the underworld and features three compositions commissioned by the company, including one by Carroll students. And next month, the company collaborates with UWM in Ravel's one-act opera, L'Enfant et le Sortilège. Lake Effect's Bonnie North sat down with Ponicek, along with Milwaukee composer Joel Boyd and UWM choreographer and puppeteer Edward Winslow, to talk about the project. Ponicek says the festival comes at the end of a three-year process.
We've been developing stories, songs, and visual art inspired by the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice over the course of 3 years now. So this is the very final shebang this weekend. And then 2 weeks from now, we engage in our largest co-production to date with UWM, Symphony Orchestra, Dance Department, and Milwaukee Opera Theater of Ravel's L'Enfant et le Sortilège.
Okay, so two very different things. With Eurydice, 3 years in the making, but there's also, we have one of the composers here, but this is a lot of original music for this. A lot of composers have written that myth into opera, but this is all new, right?
One of the ways that we're engaging with the story is to think about this myth from antiquity that has been processed by different artists over millennia. And last year, as a commitment to new work, we issued three commissions to area composers to write new pieces for area artists, and their only parameter was that they had to interpret the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice. And it had to be producible by Milwaukee Opera Theater, so they wrote on a fairly small scale. And Joel Boyd is here, who wrote a new opera called The Crawling Dove for three singers and a small chamber ensemble.
Okay, but before we get to that, Joel, tell me very quickly the Cliff Notes version of the myth for people who don't know what it is.
Orpheus and Eurydice were very much in love, and on their wedding day, Eurydice is bitten by a snake. She's a very famous snake bite victim, and taken to the underworld. Orpheus was so bereft at the loss of his wife Eurydice that he braved the journey to the underworld, played his lyre so beautifully before Hades, and won Eurydice back on one condition, that he walk in front of her on their way back to the mortal plane and not look back. And he looked.
Thus, it's a tragedy.
Thus,
yes. And so
it
she
is a
was,
tragedy.
And she ended up back in the underworld forever. She could never leave.
That is
again.
True.
Yes.
Although there are so many interpretations of the myth, I think there is one translation where they do make it out.
Oh, but, okay. So now, Joel, when you were approaching this as a composer, where were you coming into the story?
I believe I was coming in a couple thousand years after everybody else worked on this piece. So that was one of the first things that struck me, is how many pieces and how much art exists around this myth, and what, as a composer, can you contribute that's completely new to something so old. So I found myself going back to the various versions of the story, and the one that struck me the most was actually the somewhat lesser-known part of the myth, which is from Virgil's Georgics and not Ovid's Metamorphosis.
We asked the composers to use Ovid, and Joel went rogue and chose Virgil instead.
And so what is different about that particular version of the story?
The Virgil has an extra character in there that is not in the Ovid, and his name is Aristaeus. He's a beekeeper, and he's not an innocent beekeeper in this story. He harasses and chases Eurydice, and it's a little mysterious as to whether or not he was the cause of her death, where he chased her and she fell and was bitten by the snake, or he tried to rape her, or some other variation of that. So that seemed very curious to me, that this was not as common in other pieces. So I've got my wheel spinning on that and took it from there.
Another thing that I find fascinating about this is that not only have you been working on it for 3 years, you've got 45 artists involved, four venues involved, and 2 days.
Yeah. I was ready to throw the towel in when it came to scheduling the rehearsals.
I bet.
I think our largest production before this was 16 people. And so the Eurydice Festival involves 45 different artists working on four different shows in four different venues over 2 days. And each team for each production is distinct. So there are no overlapping artists. So they all are rehearsing on separate timelines in different venues, all in the same theater complex at Carroll University. But the whole building is like electrified with all things Eurydice right now. And there are so many students running around and fixing this and that and setting lights and props and developing the hallways and putting up visual art. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful madhouse right now.
Now, it takes place over the 2 days. Are people going to get to see all four pieces?
They do.
Okay.
That's part of what, you know, caused my brain to practically implode, sort of trying to figure out how we can usher the audience through each experience. So each piece is less than 30 minutes, and there are intermissions between each one. And so over the course of 2.5 hours, you get to see four kind of miniature opera experiences. Plus, there's time to walk through the passageways where we have all of the students' visual art displayed. I don't think I mentioned that. But in addition to all the operas, two photography classes and an intaglio printmaking class at Carroll University have all read the myth and done assignments inspired by the myth. And so we also have these big displays of student artwork. And several faculty members have also contributed visual art to the project. So it's really an integrated
I was going to say it's a complete experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are cupcakes.
Of course.
Yeah. We really wanted to sort of because we have these intermissions and because each piece is so small, you know, I mean, Joel's piece is this incredibly encapsulated 30-minute opera. It's really – it feels like an opera. You feel like you've been through this Greek tragedy, but it all goes by so quickly. It's just done in a blink. And so we wanted to create an environment where people could talk about what they just saw and share their experience. And so food is a pretty important part of that.
And
so
cupcakes are always lovely because they're fun. You can have more than one.
I think we were trying to find an antidote for all the tragedy. So we sort of tried to choose the most cheerful food we could think of.
Cupcakes are good.
You know?
Yes.
Because Eurydice just keeps dying. But you can go have a cupcake in between the shows.
In between. So. Yeah. Well, now we're going to turn. We have a puppet in the studio, and I understand Anton is his name.
He's just been christened.
He's just been christened Anton.
Yeah.
So, Ed, tell me a little bit about this and what this particular project is, because this is coming in a couple of weeks.
Uh huh.
Which is another reason why your hair is shorter, because you've been pulling it out.
It might be right. I've been literally pulling it out.
You were saying the Eurydice project is 45, so it's a step up from that to almost 100 people in L'Enfant et la Sortilège. It was an opera written in 1925 by Maurice Ravel with the libretto by Colette. And it was at that time, as I understand it, the Paris Opera's answer to Nijinsky's L'Après-midi d'Enfant. And so they were looking for something really absurd and eye-catching and over the top to match the, I don't know if they were rave reviews, riots.
The riotous reviews, I think you could say, yeah.
Nijinsky's work. So it's a classic, and we're doing a unclassic retelling, which Jillian and I – she brought me a photograph of a giant bubble wrap person basically and a small child or actress. And we decided that we wanted to use found objects and materials that are recycled and that are can be found in your home. So one thing led to another, and pretty soon we had a concept for the show, which was based on a child's tantrum, sort of, you know, on the order of Where the Wild Things Are.
It kicks
by
it
Sendak.
Off. Yeah, yeah. His tantrum sort of kicks off the show.
Yeah, know. And the tantrum starts things, and the child turns around, and the chair is suddenly talking to him. We decided we wanted to put the environment, you know, not only in a current time period, but also to have the environment of this child be that they're moving. And it's the 31st of the month.
His family is moving. Everything is packed up. And he has a nuclear meltdown as the movers are coming to take
everything
away.
And somehow it's going to – I think that's going to tap into some, you know, personal experiences that some of us may have had on that last day when you have to get everything out and you really are not ready. So the movers come in. And as the play begins, before the music even starts, the doors open – and we hear the sound of the truck backing up and the movers, this big cast of characters, as all a moving company. And they come into the space and they look around and whoa, the stuff's not ready to go. And that sort of begins one episode after another.
We sort of decided that they're the worst moving company in the world.
A lot of people might volunteer their moving companies for that.
They just come in and make it even worse.
And now, this is not a grand opera, right, in terms of length?
It's a tiny Yeah, it's an oddity in that way. It's only 45 minutes long in actual musical duration. It's one act. It's this surrealist libretto. But it's an enormous full symphony orchestra score for 60-some instruments and a huge cast of characters, 20-some characters. And so the piece is brief but enormous. Colette wrote the libretto in, I think, 8 days. And then it took Ravel 7 years to complete the score. There was a world war in there, too. He got distracted. But, it's really a remarkably peculiar, beautiful piece. The machines and the effects, there's a – I think it's a cheese grater in the orchestra. I mean, there are all these mechanical sounds. Ravel was so interested in machines and mechanical toys, which also is one of the things that I love very much about Edward's direction with the puppetry, is that he's actually building little contraptions out of, you know, boxes for the piece, which seems to me like a beautiful agreement with Ravel's aesthetic.
In terms of who's doing the singing, is Milwaukee Opera Theater providing the major singers in this, or are you using students? How
we
is that
actually
working?
Really distinctly avoided that, like a situation where we have sort of professional ringers and then everyone else is a student. We've really tried to integrate it. So the L'Enfant is Allison Hall, an area professional mezzo who's terrific. And then our other singers are kind of in the texture with the students. So we hope that it will be as blended as possible. But Tim Rebers is joining us, Henry Hammond, and Brett Hanisco.
And then, of course, Anton.
And yes. Anton the Frog.
Anton the Frog is made out of 4 wine boxes. And his eyes are ping pong balls.
In plastic cups. You have to have the full effect.
We challenged ourselves pretty early on not to buy anything. And so we've been scrounging dumpsters, making phone calls, restaurant supply, corporations, knocking on doors and asking for things that they would dispose of, either recycle or throw in the trash. And so everything is made out of something that we have bubble wrap from Crate and Barrel and wine boxes from Trader Joe's and coffee cups from Colectivo work. And we've had an incredible team of people gathering materials from around town for us. Edward has not painted or changed the look of anything, so you can see labels and you can see the original shape of whatever the item is. But through movement and lighting, I think you will sort of find yourself staring at the puppets and trying to figure out what they were made of. And you'll, over time, I think you'll see, oh my gosh, that's a bike helmet. And those are those Frappuccino lids?
Why, yes. So in terms of both of these projects, which are, again, happening basically cheek by jowl, mm-hmm. I mean, you're really not giving yourself a lot of breathing space for this. But in terms of sort of the trajectory of what Milwaukee Opera Theater has been doing, I mean, this just seems like – it seems so natural. Like this is absolutely what you would be doing at this point.
It does feel like a really elegant evolution from, in terms of trying to help improve the environment for performing artists in Milwaukee and create opportunities for growth for them artistically. So we're kind of growing pretty hugely. Yeah, to commission a new opera from Joel to when I first spoke with Edward at a children's dance class at Danceworks, actually, and kind of tossed out the fact that we might be doing this piece at UWM. And I think you said people have been telling me I should do that piece for years. And so as soon as someone says something like that back to me, you go, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll be working on this then.
I guess,
you know,
this,
I guess
is a partnership.
This is the way, you know, it's meant to be, I think, so we ought to do this. And so, yeah, we're very busy trying to develop opportunities for a lot of people to practice their craft.
I want to thank all three of you for coming in, and I know we didn't have enough time to go into any real detail, but thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jill Anaponicek is the artistic director of the Milwaukee Opera Theater. Joel Boyd is a Milwaukee-based composer, and Edward Winslow is a choreographer and puppet maker who teaches at UWM's Peck School of the Arts. There's information about this weekend's Eurydice Festival at Carroll University and about the L'Enfant et le Sortilège performances in mid-February from links at wuwm.com/lake effect. That's also where you can find a picture of Anton, the frog puppet, taken in the Lake Effect studio. That's Lake Effect for a Thursday. Tomorrow on the show, the continuing presence of a major department store in the Grand Avenue Mall, plus how problems with your dental health might signal something larger I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I sure hope you'll be able to tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.